The US and China have agreed to a framework for a new trade deal days before President Donald Trump is due to meet his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping in South Korea. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has told CBS News that the agreement forged on the sidelines of the ASEAN summit in Malaysia means the upcoming tariffs imposed on China are effectively off the table.
I think we had a very good two-day meeting, so it would be an extra 100% from where we are now, and I believe that that is effectively off the table. I'm not going to get ahead of the two leaders who will be meeting in Korea on Thursday, but I can tell you we had a very good 2 days, so I would expect that the threat of the 100% has gone away.
To find out more, Nicholas Burns is a former US ambassador to the People's Republic of China and now professor of the practice of diplomacy and international relations at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Nicholas, welcome to Breakfast.
Good morning. Thank you so much.
How substantive do you expect this agreement to be between China and the US?
Well, I think it's positive news that they've agreed because these are the two largest global economies. We all want to see global stability and markets, and so a good step forward. But it's unclear what type of trade deal this is going to be. I don't think it's going to be a typical trade deal, you know, 1,000 pages long, written by lawyers with all sorts of deadlines. It more likely is going to be a series of agreements on several issues, on TikTok, on fentanyl, which is a major problem here in the U.S. The precursor chemicals for fentanyl come from the black market in China. Certainly on agricultural purchases by China. China's the largest market for U.S. agriculture. So issues like that. And then hopefully, as Secretary Bessent was saying on your program, that China will not go forward with its export controls on rare earth, and the United States will not go forward with its 100% additional tariffs on top of the ones that already exist. It's almost like a truce, an uneasy truce in a trade war that I think will likely continue after this meeting.
Nicholas, what do you think is at stake for each leader here?
Neither leader can end up as the loser, certainly politically. And I think that's been quite obvious on the Chinese side. Since the trade war began back in April, the Chinese have met each U.S. move blow for blow, punch for punch, and the same is true of the U.S. They're almost like two boxers in a ring, circling each other. And so I think the Chinese will certainly insist that Xi Jinping be seen as someone who got as well as he gave. And the same is true of President Trump. And so that's why it's taken so long for Vice Premier Hurley Fung, the Chinese negotiator, and our Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent to work out what appears to be a deal that both can live with. But it will leave many issues unresolved and to be, you know, discussed, debated, fought over the ensuing months.
How do you see the situation more broadly, Nicholas? We have heard the narrative of a United States which has been unpredictable, somewhat chaotic, difficult to read, and that China was positioning itself as a more predictable and stable global nation. How do you see that?
Well, certainly the President Trump's tariff policies have unleashed a wave of uncertainty around the world. There's no question about that. You know, we had an effective tariff rate in this country back in January before he took over below 3%. It's now 18.6%. And in the case of China, it rose to 157% before this latest agreement, which will reduce it. But still, you know, every country in the world has had to negotiate a different singular trade agreement with the U.S., which has taken a lot of time. It's upset markets. It's roiled global trade. So there's no question about that. I would say the Chinese are trying to present themselves as the responsible party. But again, this is the country that, or the government, I should say, that for decades, China has been engaged in intellectual property theft against international companies like Australian and American companies, forced technology transfer. And so it hasn't been a reliable custodian of global trade rules. And both of them have rolled out these big bazookas of announcements of big tariffs on the other. And that's where I think both have decided to back down a little bit this week because, you know, both countries need stability as well.
How would you describe the current political and economic situation inside China right now?
Well, the Chinese economy has been slowing down. It's now growing below 5%. It has for the past few years. And that's a concern for the leadership. They have the property crisis, still 80 million vacant apartments because of that bubble that was created several years ago. They have a major problem with youth unemployment and an additional problem of a demographic cliff, given the very alarmingly for the Chinese low rates of birth. And so I think they're worried a lot about that. And China is, of course, a manufacturing company and an export country. So I think it wants stability with Japan, with Australia, with the United States, and hopefully there'll be a period of stability after President Trump and President Xi meet at the end of this week.
How important is it for President Xi to meet the needs and aspirations as much as he can of young Chinese who are coming through and facing unemployment and other challenges right now?
Well, obviously it's an authoritarian government and a dictatorship in the country, so people don't have the right to speak out. But you do sense and can see signals on social media, Chinese social media, Weibo and WeChat, of dissatisfaction. And there is a lot of dissatisfaction about the state of the economy. The other thing that's happened inside China more recently has been this extraordinary increase in the number of PLA, People's Liberation Army, senior officers, generals and admirals, who've been fired on corruption charges. I left China in January. This was a big story throughout my time in China, but it's continued at a greater pace. And so there's the appearance of, at least in relations between the Chinese leadership and the Chinese military, a lot of instability and a lot of people now being tried and sent to jail.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast, and you're hearing from Nicholas Burns, a former US ambassador to China, now professor of the practice of diplomacy and international relations at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. And Nicholas, we're seeing a lot more engagement between Europe and Australia as Europe has some concerns about protecting its trade routes into the Asia Pacific and Southeast Asia in particular. How's that viewed by China?
I think the Chinese are worried about it. It was clear from a trade perspective, human rights perspective, and a military perspective that the EU and NATO countries have begun to think over the last several years very strategically about their interests in the Asia-Pacific region. So, for example, they've been much more outspoken in Brussels, NATO and the EU, about their opposition to what China is doing in Taiwan, trying to intimidate the Taiwan authorities. The Europeans have joined Australia, the United States, and other countries in sanctions against Chinese entities that have violated international law, including Chinese companies selling dual-use technology to Russia for its war effort in Ukraine. The Europeans have been very vocal opponents of what they believe are, and we agree with them, human rights violations by the government of China in Xinjiang, Tibet, Hong Kong, the lack of religious freedom. So it's quite striking to me to see not just Australia, Japan, the United States, India, South Korea all cooperate together, but to see the Europeans rather decisively find their voice and believe that they've got to be involved in these issues as well. Another example of this is we've had British, French, German warships transit peacefully in international waters, the Taiwan Strait, as Australia, the United States, other countries have done routinely for a generation. So that is a trend line that the Chinese have been very worried about.
Well, Nicholas, I hope this academic chapter for you is enjoyable and challenging, and I hope Cambridge, Massachusetts is treating you well. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Always a pleasure to be on your radio show. Thanks so much.
Nicholas Burns, former US ambassador to China, just finished up in January, now professor of the practice of diplomacy and international relations at Harvard University,